Hi, welcome to another session at Tech Talk. This time I'm actually live in Redmond in the Channel 9 studio and with a special guest, Seth Juarez.
How are you doing?
I'm good, and you?
I'm excited to be here. How do you like our studio here in the
it's
United States?
It's pretty awesome. It's a little bigger than ours.
Oh, is it?
Back in Germany, but
nice.
To be honest, we have a very cool green screen.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't beat a good green screen.
So I obviously took the chance to wear a green t-shirt then.
Oh, nice.
Otherwise, I can't actually wear this.
I was going to wear my green t-shirt, but I thought it would be weird if we had the same shirt on, so.
Yeah, partner look, maybe not.
Yeah.
But anyways, in this session, we actually want to dig a little deeper into machine learning in general. Seth is actually, well, for me, is an expert for machine learning or machine learning.
I know a little things.
Some things he knows, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are actually quite a lot of sessions or introductory sessions on machine learning in general. Mm-hmm. And this time I actually want to dig a little deeper what is actually behind certain algorithms.
Right.
But before we actually dig right into that one, let's do a little recap again what the machine learning process actually looks like.
Sure. So what for me, machine learning is about taking data and extracting meaning out of it. And the easiest form of machine learning that I know about is called supervised learning. And with supervised learning, you're trying to learn. Like, for example, let's just say you have a lot of people in your database and you want to know, is this person going to buy something? Yes or no? Notice that with supervised learning, you're learning a very specific output, yes or no. But in order to actually do the machine learning, you have to go through this process. And this is the way I like to understand the process. Other people like to understand a different way.
Yep.
But you always have to start with your data.
Obviously. Just a little step back. Mm-hmm. You mentioned supervised learning. Mm-hmm. The other alternative is unsupervised learning.
Correct.
So just to make sure, unsupervised learning would be, okay, you don't really know what the outcome is.
That's right.
You want to make sense out of your data. So typically, I'm guessing before, or sometimes you have your massive mm-hmm. amounts of data and you don't really know what your data is actually telling you.
Yeah.
So then unsupervised or like clustering would make mm-hmm. sense, but then usually you would go into supervised learning afterwards.
Yeah, and I should have mentioned unsupervised learning, just like you said, is when you have a lot of data and you're trying to sort of make sense out of your data. You said that, but let's just think of a really simple example. Say you have 10 million people in your database and you want to be able to know, okay, is Sue like Charlie? Because if Sue is like Charlie, then maybe Charlie will buy the stuff that Sue buys, right? So you're trying to create a grouping. Notice you really don't have an exact answer. You just want to know, how do I create a structure of these people so that then I can relate them to each other? And so that's the way, for example, collaborative filtering systems work for recommendation systems, is by able to group things together, like either things you buy or people. And then once you know that Sally is like Jim, you know that Jim might buy the stuff that Sally does, but notice there's no specific answer like yes or no. It's just of how similar are these things. So that's more of an unsupervised learning thing, like you said.
Okay. Then let's go through like a typical machine learning process and keep it as simple as possible.
Cool.
And there you mentioned supervised learning is actually the simplest form of machine learning.
Yeah, because you're trying to learn a very specific output. And the easiest output is yes or no. And so usually you start with data. When people are talking about machine learning, it feels like a little nebulous or a little cloudy. And I'm not just saying that because of the cloud.
In the cloud.
But if you have your data, you might have a square of data, which is your database, and you have like a customer table, for example, and let's just say you want to learn whether or not they're going to buy something. So you start with your data, but in order for these models to actually work, you need to convert your data over into some kind of mathematical representation. You also need to actually clean your data, because you might have, for example, in your database, a lot of empty sort of data. You need to backfill that in. And I'm going to do this twice, right? Because it's important to see these examples twice. Once you have your data into a math representation, you can build a model. Then you can use that model to predict. So I think if we go to the next slide, we have an actual example.
Yes,
so,
indeed.
So pretend that you are working at a tennis shop. And outside you have a court, and you want to know how many people to staff at the tennis shop. Because if it's a certain kind of weather outside, people don't show up, so you don't need to bring as many people, right? So in this example, we have some history of the last 9 or 10 days that you've been there. This is what our data is, right? And when we're looking at machine learning in general, there are certain things that we're looking for. Like we want to know if people are going to play or not, and that's the label. Mm-hmm. The features are the thing we're using to make the prediction, and the values are the actual instances. So think of like the features and the label as a class, right, where you have Outlook, temperature, and windy, and then your label is what you want to output. And so what you're going to do is give your computer a lot of this data, and it's going to figure out how to do that. Right? The machine learning problem primarily is just from this, given the outlook, temperature, and windy, what is the class going to be? What's the output going to be?
Okay.
But in reality, as you know, this is what's in your database. And it's like, this is where you have to do what's called a little yak shaving. We need to clean up our data, and we need to convert it into a modelable or linear algebra form.
And I've heard like usually it would take up about 80%
yeah,
of your time.
This is the not fun part, but it's the part where you're spending most of your time. So for example, if you have turtle cloud in there, it means that it's overcast. So you need to go in there and convert that. If it's question mark here, it means someone didn't fill something in. So what
missing
do we do?
Missing values.
Yeah, so there's a missing value. When you have this right here, 28% on windy, what does that mean? And so now you have to be able to, when you're putting your data into the machine learning algorithms, you have to be able to say beforehand, what do I do with missing values? What do I do with percentage values in the windy column? Do I set a threshold? If it's below 50, it means it's not. If it's above 50, it is windy. So this is the sort of the, this is the most boring part, and it again is, this is a computer science term, yak shaving. It means doing all the useless stuff before you actually do the important stuff. But this turns out to be the most important part, and the part that probably takes the longest time.
And I'm guessing, okay, here in this example, it's fairly easy. We can just say, like, as you said, 50% yes or not. But then I'm guessing if you're working in IoT scenarios and so on, it's usually like a matter of the collaboration with the domain knowledge workers and so on.
And then the other problem becomes, like, this example is really simple because we only have three columns and one label, right? You might be working with 10,000 columns and 2 million rows. And then it's not so easy to know that, is there even a turtle cloud in there?
Yeah.
And so then you have to, for example, look at the column and see the distribution of data and see if there's data in there that's missing or see if there's data in there that looks the same. Then maybe you can sort of make these two the same thing. And so that's why, for example, in Azure ML, when you're doing experiments, you can actually click on the column and see the distribution of data to see, is there any type of data cleaning you need to do and how you can do it.
I'm guessing, since you've already mentioned like 10,000 of columns, this is another point, like you might not actually want to have all those 10,000 of columns in your model.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to pick out the actually very relevant and accurate.
So the question then becomes, how do you know which columns are the most relevant? And that's where science comes in. You would make experiments and see how well it does.
Yeah.
So once you've done this transformation, you have to put into a mathy. So for example, a lot of the models that machine learning does uses like linear algebra, vectors and matrices. Like for example, support vector machines or perceptrons, they're working in sort of linear space. And so we need to convert this over to something that looks more like that. And this is the part where it gets scary for people, but in reality, if you're looking at Azure ML, it just does this for you. Right, this is the part it does for you.
Behind the scenes.
But it's important to realize it's doing something like that so it can run these models.
Okay.
Once you have done this, then you need to come up with a model. This is just an example of one. This is a decision tree. And so now you can see, for example, if the outlook is sunny and the temperature is low, then we should play. So for example, if the outlook is sunny and the temperature is low, doesn't matter if it's windy or not, because if we go down to there is no other sunny and low, but notice that you do play. Here's another one. If the outlook is rainy and it's not windy, so let's find rainy and it's not windy, then you play, otherwise you do. If it's overcast, notice that you always play, irrespective of what's going on. And here's the thing, the computer, we could have made this in our heads, right? We could have thought about this, but again, remember, if you have 10,000 columns and 2 million rows, this decision tree has become more difficult, so you use numerical sort of methods to find out where should I split and then what should we do as we go down.
One thing to point out here is it's one of many options to
Absolutely.
Build a model. And this is actually where we'll dig a little deeper later on.
Yeah, I hope so. And then obviously once you have your model, you do a prediction. So if it's sunny and low and it's not windy, we go here sunny and a low. Looks like we are going to play, and so that in that day you need to make sure you have enough staff at your shop because people are going to come and try out the rackets.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And so notice that this is kind of a dumb example when it comes to cheesy example. And the reason why I use a tennis data set is because it's in all of our machine learning textbooks at the beginning. It's a tennis data set. But once you have the model, then you can sort of give it stuff and notice that it learned from past data how to make a prediction there in the class.
Okay, cool. So we've now gone through like the four steps of a typical machine learning process. How does it actually look like in Azure Machine Learning?
Well, let's go there. I actually loaded up a model already. So if you can see this right here, but if you're interested, if you hit on plus, I am just literally doing this binary classification for adults. And what it's doing is it's going to learn based upon some demographics if you make greater than $50,000 a year or less than $50,000 a year. And this is this particular model. And you can see as you right click, if I visualize this data, just like I said, you have the columns. And then you gotta tell it what you want it to learn. And in this case, we're learning income, which is less than 50K or greater than 50K. Notice this is a prototypical supervised learning algorithm because we're learning essentially yes or no.
Yeah.
Are you making more than $50,000? Yes. No. Less than $50,000. And now what we need to do is we need to pick on columns. And you see in the Azure ML, you can see it tells you the distribution of the data. So you can see this is all the data's. This is all the data that we have, right? And what's going to be relevant and what's not.
So essentially, this is actually the very same machine learning problem that we've seen beforehand in the machine learning process with whether you should play outside or
not.
That's
right. And if you can put your problem into I have some data and I want to learn between this thing or that thing, and you have examples of that from the past, this is the prototypical supervised machine learning problem. And it's pretty cool. I mean, this will show you, like, remember how I said you need to know if Turtle Cloud is the same as Cloudy? This will show you all of your data beforehand, right? And so that's what's going on. Remember, the second step then was to clean your data up. And you can see, it's literally right here, right? If there's missing data.
Actually call it clean missing data,
And there's a number of things. Like, for example, you can join tables together. You can fill in missing data with averages. You can transform some data, if I remember right. You can see it right here. There's tons of data transformation stuff, or manipulation, scale, reduction. So say, for example, you have values that fall outside of a certain range, you can clip them, right? And so that's what this part of the thing is, right? Mm-hmm. And you can see that when we talked about it, that's the first part. It usually takes the longest to get it to do that.
I can't imagine. And then the next module is then like figuring out which actually are the relevant features, relevant columns in general.
So when you look at this, it's telling you which columns you actually want to use. In this case, it looks like it's using work class, occupation, and native country, right? And then here, if I remember right, notice you need to pick what the label is.
Because
that's what we want to learn, because we're training a model, and we're using this data up here. We want to learn this data down here, which is the income. You can see that here. And we're projecting out certain columns to do the learning. So remember, it was Outlook, temperature, and windy. Here we have work class, occupation, and native country. And we want to learn income.
Okay. So, we see that in this module, it's called train model. Mm-hmm. So obviously, it's sort of an empty template. We need to define which algorithm. And on the left-hand side, we can actually see a catalog of many algorithms just out of the box.
That's correct.
So is there like one algorithm that rules all the scenarios pretty much, just like can be applicable to everything, that is like the best performing?
That is a good question, and it honestly depends on your data. So I wouldn't be able to say. There is one model that's the simplest to understand that then later other models sort of build upon, and that's the perceptron model. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to run this, and I think we should dive in and talk about how the perceptron model works.
Yeah. So what does perceptron mean?
So Frank Rosenblatt, in I think it was 1954-ish, well, a long time ago, he made up an algorithm where he saw like points in space. So this is something we could all understand, right? We have some points, right? And we want to learn between, so pretend that X is like temperature and Y is like windy. Notice, remember, we've already talked about taking your data and moving it into a series of points. So pretend this represents some of your data. So when you're looking at this, what's the easiest way to separate these things? a line. And it turns out that mathematically speaking, there is this, you remember the dot product where you dot two things together. It turns out that if the dot product is positive, that means that it's on one side of the line. If it's negative, it means it's on the other side of the line. If it's zero, it means it's on the line, you don't know, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the interesting thing. And so what Frank Rosenblatt said, he said, well, let's start with a empty weight vector and let's go around and do the dot product of that thing with this thing. And if it's on the wrong side of the line, we'll just move the line.
Okay.
Right, and you do that iteratively until it learns the right line. You can see this is an example. You can see initially as it's running through, it's not doing a super good job because it makes mistakes, but then it starts to weigh itself out. And then at the end of the step, what I do is I calculate where it stayed still the longest and put that back in and sort of averages it out a little bit. And so notice that here, even though it makes mistakes, it still gets a lot of the data right.
Okay, I think one point that you've just pointed out or highlighted was iterative process.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, machine learning, it's not like one point in time where you've learned everything. It's an iterative process.
That's
and
right.
I usually take like the analogy of little kids. It's not like with 3 years, you've seen everything, you've observed everything
right.
and have learned everything. It's always a lifelong process. And this is actually a very nice example of like, yeah, iterative, where it's learning again, taking the feedback in and readjusting the line.
The other thing that's interesting is that, say this is your data from this week, next week your data might look different, so you might need to run your model again. So the question is, well, how often should I run the model? Well, just run the model anytime your computer's not doing anything. So over the weekend, look at all your data, have the computer all weekend, run the models again, and then use that model for prediction the week after. And you can do this all the time. The methods that we're showing you here are all called batch models, where you're giving it a batch of data and it's learning a model. There's also something called online learning where you can give it 1 point at a time. But those, I've heard, tend to not work as well.
I see, okay.
Right, because for example, in this case, it went through each point, but let's just say it ended at a weird point, it might be skewed, but because I have the whole batch of data with me, I can take the average of where it stayed still the longest and sort of move it back to where it needs to go.
And we've seen that this algorithm is actually covered in Azure Machine Learning as well.
In fact, you can see right here that we are using a two-classed averaged perceptron. I'm not sure what they mean by average, but it might have to do with the fact that it averages back to where it's stopped moving the most.
Yeah, and I guess so as well.
And that's cool. I mean, right as we were talking, it finished this particular model, and it was pretty cool. You can see all the check marks after I hit play.
Okay. But then if you go back to the visualization.
Sure, let's go.
I mean, let's face it, this data is not really realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks, I mean, this is something that you could pretty much judge by just looking
mm-hmm.
at it. So why would you bother with machine learning? Or I'm guessing this is a very simple example anyways.
So it turns out that this model only works with data that is linearly separable. So for example, you might learn a line, but here's another visualization. Your data might look like this, right? Notice that there is no line in the universe that will separate this data. In fact, as you try to draw some lines, let's draw a line right here, notice that you're gonna fail a lot of the time.
Yeah.
There's no line that will fix this. I'm trying to think, maybe if I slice this off, but it's not possible. And so now if you don't have a good linear separation of your data, you need to use a different model. So for example, if you run the experiment, let's see how well we did actually. I think you can evaluate the model here. In this case, it did pretty good. I mean, it got 84% accuracy, which is okay, right? In fact, if anything ever gets like 100% accuracy, it's probably wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once you're getting in the 90s.
Isn't it called like overfitting or something?
It means that you've done really well just on your data, but you might not be able to predict on the future. And so notice in this case it does a pretty good job, which is great. But if you have data like this, it's not going to be great. So you have two options. You can either change the input data or change the function that you're using. If you still want to let's say we're adamant about using perceptron, we want to learn a line, right? And notice that in the lines case, what we're doing is we're taking these two data points, right? We're dotting them with this other thing and we're learning positive or negative, right?
Yeah.
So imagine like if there's two data points, the dot product is taking this one times this one plus this one times. So it's like we have these two little nodes, right, that are sitting there. We're putting data in, right? And then we're getting plus or minus out. So we can either change the space or we can change the function, right? Instead of having two little dots, we can start to do crazy things in the middle, or we can change the space. And
so what do you do in this case? Change the space?
In this case, I'm going to change the space. So think of this. I want you to think of this data, because remember, we still want to use a linear separator. What I'm going to do is imagine you're on your bed and you spill your drink, right? It's usually going to be like in a weird circle. So what you do, what I want you to do is I want you to take your sheet from the middle of the stain and pull it up.
Yeah.
And notice that now you can put a plane through it, which is a linear thing, and you can cut it right off. And I think I have an example of this. This is my favorite example. We're going to use some Python here. From vector import.
This is so typically mathematical. Like if you can't solve it with that function,
just
add another dimension to the problem space.
So here's the example. This is a little squarey, right, because I'm drawing uniformly at random. The other one was a little more circly because I'm drawing from a uniform distribution. But in this case, it's kind of the same thing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a third dimension. So I'm going to take x and I'm going to go to x squared. I'm going to take y, go to y squared, and I'm going to take the new z is going to be x times y,
okay,
or square root of 2x times y. And when you do that, this is what happens. Boom, just like our sheet, right? And so now what I can do is I can take a plane and separate that out.
Yeah.
And then when I smush it back down, what does the cut look like? It's like you cut along and it looks like a circle. So instead of actually getting a weight vector back, like you do in perceptron, you get a series of points where the cut was made. And
okay,
if you look at this algorithm, I'm going to make it do its thing. Oh, that's not the one I want to show you. I'm going to make it do its thing. And what it's going to do is it's going to do that perceptron thing in the extra dimension. And now what it's going to do is it's going to say, okay, this is the cut boundary. And so now what you do when you're doing prediction is you say, okay, which side of the line are you on, this side or this side? And then you do that for all of them, add them up, and it's either inside or outside, and that's how it does predictions. And this is the basis for what are called support vector machines.
Okay. And I'm guessing support vector machines is also in Azure Machine Learning?
You can see that right, in fact, right here. Locally deep support vector machines. I think there's a...
There's another one just at the
bottom. Two class. There's a different... I don't know what the difference are between these particular implementations, but in essence, what it's doing is it's making an assumption about projecting your data into a new space.
Okay.
Learning a linear separator there, and then you get the cut back.
Now that you've actually zoomed in,
nice thing
to point out as well is there are two-class algorithms and multi-class algorithms.
Yes.
So a two-class would be binary classification.
Yes and no, yeah. And multi-class would be like A, B, C, or D. And it turns out that, for example, the perceptron algorithm can only learn yes and no, because you're either on one side of the line or you're on the other side. So what do you do with that? Well, you have these things called the multi-class classifier, which means, like a one versus all means, if say you want to learn between A, B, C, and D, what you can do is say, is it A or something else? B or something else? C or something else? And so you use this with the perceptron and you sort of feed them in, and then it learns multiple classes that way. So in essence, if you have four things you're choosing from, you have four learners that are learning between one, and then whoever scores the highest wins. And so that way you say, oh, is it A or something else? It's A. Okay, then we'll do that. But if the other one says it's C, but this one scores higher, that's the right answer, right? So with a perceptron, notice that you only learn yes or no, but if you use one versus all multi-class, then you can sort of use four perceptrons to learn A, B, C, or D.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've seen like perceptron being the easiest machine learning
to understand,
algorithm,
yeah,
pretty much. Then support vector machines. The next one that is fairly popular, and you've actually pointed it out in the machine learning process, is decision tree.
Yes, and that one's a lot easier to understand sort of visually. So let me go back here, it looks like I've already generated, but let me explain how you do this. So let's just say, because I think this is the tennis data set that we've been looking at before. Notice that there is the decision tree that it made. So the question is, we want to start at the root and then split down to make a decision, right? It's like, for example, notice that if it's always rainy, you're always, well, in this case, it looks like it didn't, If it's rain, yeah, if it's rainy, we always play. That is right. So this is what we got to do.
It doesn't really make sense to
me. Yeah, I know. That's because I changed the data around. Watch, if I go like this and then regenerate, notice that now it's false.
Yeah.
And so it did learn from the data. So this is how I like to think of decision trees, right? And it's a pretty simple way to think about it. So we want to learn play or not. So the first thing we want to do is we want to measure how messy the answer is. And there is this thing called entropy, which lets you measure messiness. And mm-hmm. it's a really specific function. It's just a math function you can figure out. And so if this is really messy, it's great. But what we want to do is we want to pick a column to split on. And so what we want to do is we want to pick a column that if we pick that column, it makes it less messy. Let me see if I can explain. So for example, let me sort on temperature. Notice that when the temperature is high and the temperature is low, the answer is still kind of messy, right?
Yeah.
When I go to Outlook, right, notice when I sort on that, well, look at this. Notice that when we pick rainy, we don't play at all. It's not messy at all.
Yeah.
Right? It's just all the same thing. And so when we're trying to find the messiness of a column given another column, that's called conditional entropy. And so what we do is we measure messiness of the column. We subtract out the messiness, right, of the column that we are trying to split on, and then we pick the one that's the best. Right?
Oh, and there you've also listed the formula that mm-hmm. is actually being used.
Yeah, so there's the messiness. We take away the mess. So for example, let's just say, here's a really good example. Let me show you something that will, very good. Notice that we have, there's the outlook, right? There's the temperature, and there's the windy, right? You can see which one lessens the messiness the most, right? So for example, let's just say these things were, let's just say the messiness of Outlook was completely gone, right? That means that this would be zero,
yeah,
right? And so what's happening is the less messiness we subtract out, the higher the number, which the better it is.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And so you can see that that's happening. And so here in this case, turns out that this is the easiest one.
There you can pretty much actually draw a line saying like, oh, as soon as it's overcast, it's... Mm-hmm.
And now notice that the messiness changes as I change things. And so what happens is we pick the column with that gives the highest information gain, reduces the messiness, right? And then we split mm-hmm. on the values that are in that column. And once we've done that, then at each leaf, we do that again until we reach the bottom.
Okay, so we actually are with each splitting and with each branching, we want to gain as much information as
correct.
Possible. Hence the IG for information,
right. Information gain.
Okay, cool. So, okay, we obviously like with decision trees, there are many different ways of building a decision
tree,
and therefore this is like, why you actually use information gain as well to build the most optimal decision tree, for instance.
There are many ways of splitting. I think I've mentioned just one way of, there's other ways of splitting, and if you actually look at the machine learning algorithms inside of Azure Machine Learning, notice we have something called a decision forest, decision jungle. Notice we have the multi-class and the two-class, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's in there. We also have something called a boosted decision tree.
What is it?
Which is like a lot of tiny little trees that are sort of some combination of them together, right? And so there's a number of ways to do it, but in the end, what you're really doing is you're finding this way of splitting up the decision down, and you can use information gain, you can use other things to do that.
Okay.
But notice that you have a number of decision tree-like things. I'm not sure what the forest and jungle are. I mean, you can look that up, but it's this, in the same spirit. Same
okay. Way. If you mentioned before, like many little trees, with little you mean actually not many layers
yes.
inside. So
that's right.
Just like two layers, what we've seen before.
So the example is, well, what if you get down to like the node at the bottom and you have lots of different answers? Well, you can just pick the average, right? Or you can pick the one that's there the most.
Yeah.
You notice you're making some mistakes. And actually, if you think about decision trees, here, let me show you. And this is the first time I've explained it this way. So get ready. So remember how perceptron sort of makes this line?
Yeah.
Right? Decision trees, what it's doing, let me see if I can erase. It's like doing this sort of splitting, mm. right? Like this. right? Every time you branch down, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Sometimes, and then when you're down here, it goes like, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that's really what's happening if you're looking at it from the top down, right? And so notice that this is a nonlinear separator that works as well. And it's a good way to think about it, because if you think about this, it's splitting your data out half here, and then there's two more branches down here, and then two more branches down there, and that's how that works.
Okay, cool. So usually when I read about machine learning algorithms, like the three most common algorithms are usually mentioned, like first one, like support vector machines, uh-huh. we've just covered. Mm-hmm. Then decision forest, decision trees, just covered. Mm-hmm. The last one is usually neural networks.
Yes, and that one's that's the new hotness nowadays, right? So let me see if I can explain. So remember, I'm gonna use some little squares. So remember we had temperature, outlook, and windy, right? And you just showed me this. I didn't do the arrow. Where's the arrow?
Wasn't it like
control shift? There you go. Yeah. Control shift. There you go. So remember, we have outlook going in there, temperature going in there, and windy going in there, and we're dotting it with this weight vector. Remember the perceptron. Once we get the dot product, it's either going to be positive or negative, right? Remember, what we decided is we could either, if it's not linearly separable, we can change the input space. Remember, we changed the input space and added another dimension. Or we can change the function. So I'm gonna redraw this in a different way. So here is the, again, outlook, temperature, and windy. And instead of getting a plus or a minus one, what we're gonna do is we're gonna feed them into these intermediate sort of layers. So this is gonna go in here, this is gonna go in here, this is, oops.
No,
oh, no.
The wrong way.
I meant the other way. I meant this way. So. And then what we're going to do is we're going to also go into here, right? So this is the same function we had before, right? Remember before we either got a plus or a minus one, but now what we're doing is we're doing this dot product and feeding it into this middle thing.
Okay, so we just add another abstraction layer.
A layer on top, right? And what you do is now you have these little dampening functions that you learn a coefficient for, just like we learned, like when you learn the dot product, when you're learning the line, you get like a number here, 2 and 3 and 4, and then say you have the number 1 coming in, this times this, 2 and 3, you get this times this, this times this, this times this, you add them all together and feed it into here, and it was either plus or minus, remember? So
yeah.
Here you're gonna get some plus or minus number, here you're gonna get some plus or minus number, and what we're gonna do is we're gonna find a function that dampens it.
Okay.
Right, so these functions just have to be differentiable, which is a nice calculus term, so like a sigmoidal function. And what they do is they dampen things, and now what we do is we take the linear combination of this and then learn the plus minus.
Okay. So this is something called like a two-layered?
This is a two-layer neural network with one hidden layer.
I see. And I'm assuming this is something that we have in Azure Machine.
Oh yes,
as well.
We absolutely do. And the cool thing about this, and people don't know this, so let me find the, where is mine? Okay, there's multi-class. Do we have a regular neural? Here,
yeah,
it's a two-class neural
further
network.
Down.
So let me go over here, and if I go to quick help, notice that people don't know this, but you can actually use something called, there it is.
In case you want to have more layers.
Yes.
How do you know whether two layers are enough?
You use science, right? Which is you try it and it either works or it doesn't. So you actually can type or paste what's called NetSharp, and you can see the guide to NetSharp neural networks, where you can specify the type of network that you want. Otherwise, it's going to build, I don't know which one it builds by default, but there's one that I've built in some libraries that I've built where it has a certain number of hidden layers every time. But you can actually specify your own thing. And I have it on good word that these are probably the best optimized neural networks. Because the thing about neural networks, unlike SVM, is SVM has an exact answer every time. An exact answer mathematically, it might not fit the best on your data, but neural networks does not have the best answer every time, so you have to do this really interesting optimizations. But I've had it on good word that these are probably the best optimized neural network finders that there are. And you can even specify your own, how you want your neural network to look like.
Okay. Isn't there like one nice demo as well? Like I think like with the handwritten digit recognizer.
Yes.
This can be easily solved with neural networks.
Yes.
As well.
You could probably solve it with other machine learning algorithms. There's also, and this is going to if you think about it too hard, it might hurt your head. You can also use a number of machine learning algorithms, yeah, and then you can do a linear combination of them, right? To see.
So almost like a random forest where they're all like the boosted decision tree.
You can use a decision tree, you can use a perceptron and an SVM, and then you can take a linear combination, right? This is called ensemble learning, where you're actually putting multiple models together, and so now you're getting the power of all of them, right? You can do that too. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's just computer stuff, right?
Okay. Cool. Okay, so we've covered neural networks, mm-hmm, and there's this, like, so I've heard like neural networks usually used to be like so in the 90s,
yes,
and then just like in the 2000s, it usually was like
SVMs yeah,
or
and
like
decision
random
trees,
forests.
Yeah.
And now there's this whole new buzz going on with deep learning. What is actually deep learning?
So I'm not an expert, but I've talked to some folks here at Microsoft that have used this stuff. Notice that when I drew it, there was only like a single direction going up, right? With deep learning, you can actually have feedback loops, and then you can also have like weird and bigger structures. You can also hook neural networks up together to learn a specific, like say for example, you want to detect face, you can have part of the neural network just looking for eyeballs,
yeah,
right? Another one looking for nose, and then you sort of aggregate these together. And so what's happening now is because of our computation power, we can make these things very deep. And now they're starting to learn some more interesting things when you hook them all up together.
Oh, and hence deep learning.
Yeah, deep learning, because the network is much deeper and you're learning concepts inside of it. That's the way I understand it. I might be wrong, but that's the way it was explained to me, and maybe I didn't understand it. You know,
and it's like typically used in computer vision, I'm guessing.
It could be. I mean, the thing about it is it just depends on your data, right?
Yeah.
I'm always hesitant to say, this is always going to work. I mean, it might not work. Maybe your data is weird.
Yeah. Okay. You've already shown like one the last module, the evaluate model.
Mm-hmm. Let's go there again.
Okay. But then one interesting thing is it has two input arguments. What do you do with the second?
Oh,
input.
Okay. Got it. So the question, so we kind of neglected this part, and so let's talk about this a little bit more. The question is, how do we know if these things are doing well?
Yeah.
The only way to do it is with the data you have. So imagine splitting the data up. So in this case, notice that on the left-hand side, we're getting 70% of the data and training the model. The balance, or 30% that we have left over, we're using to see how well it did. So imagine you build this model, and then you say, okay, now we have 30% of the data, let's feed it to the model, and let's see if it guesses right. And so that's what this other split side is for, right? To score the model. And in fact, here's an interesting thing, you don't use this to do prediction in Azure, you use it for experiments. What you can do is once you've learned a model, there's a way to save the model out, right?
Hang on, I think you wouldn't want to actually save the two-class average perceptron, you would want to save the trained model. Yeah.
There you go. So I got that wrong. So notice that we trained a model and we save this for later. Because for example, if you're hooking this up, and this is if you're looking later down the road, if you're hooking this up to a web service, if you pass this through, it's going to go through the whole process.
Yeah.
Or whereas if you save the trained model out, then it's just a model, right? And so that's the important, make sure you do the scoring right.
I kind of like the new addition with the minimap.
Yeah, that's
as well.
that's new because
like
we can scroll around all we want.
Okay, with this experiment, it's not really that necessary, but most Azure ML experiments just like get really huge as well.
That's right. But now notice here's what it learned, right? This is called the ROC curve, and this is the accuracy. This is usually only what we like to think about, but there's more measurements of goodness. And that's important because this was the part.
You have a nice slide as well.
I do. This slide is important because it depends on like what it is that you want to learn, right? So notice that the precision is like this is all measurements of truth. So this recall measures how good you are at measuring truth. Precision's measuring how good you are at being positive. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if you think about it, here's an example. If you're a doctor, right, and you're predicting whether or not someone has a particular disease, giving information, which one's better?
Well, you want to have as many true positives and true negatives as possible.
You do, but if you're going to make a mistake, on what side do you want to make a mistake? You want to always say yes. So you'd rather have a better precision than recall.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? And so, for example, that's what those numbers are for. And the accuracy is the whole thing put together.
Okay.
And I hope I didn't get that backwards. But just remember, like, if you're going to make a mistake and you're a doctor and you're diagnosing cancer, you'd rather have a false positive than a false negative. Right? Which means you'd rather say, it looks like you might have cancer, so that they can do more checks.
Yeah.
Right? Just in case. Because this is a life-threatening thing. Right? And so that's why, for example, if you're guessing positive, you might want to have better, you might want to have less precision and better recall than the others.
Okay. Right? Makes sense.
So, like, here's an example. So, you have cancer. Right?
That's so tragic.
Oh, sorry. Totally scared you. Right? You want to get, you don't care if you mess up here. You kind of want to be better there. You see that? And so that's where if you look at the, if you look at this, you can actually get the false negative, true negative, false positive, and this accurate precision. Mm. You see that? And so it gives you all of this stuff.
Right? What I also like is the threshold thing. I mean, here we are just assuming as soon as the probability is higher than 50%, then it's positive. But maybe 50% is not the right threshold. And therefore, you might want to adjust it.
There you go. See, and I didn't know what that did. So thank you for enlightening me.
You're welcome.
It's great.
You've seen the light.
Yes, I have.
Cool. Okay. But then another thing that the cool thing about this module, the Evaluate model, is you can easily compare different models as well. That's actually what I wanted to point out with the second input argument.
Look at you. So let's go like this, and let's control C and control V. So we're going to take that out, and we're going to, I don't know, what other model should we use? Let's use a decision, two-class decision forest.
Yes.
Right? That's the thing we want to learn.
Let's see whether you get all those lines
I know,
correct.
I got it wrong when we were practicing. It was so embarrassing.
This is a test now.
So this first data goes right here.
Very correct.
This second data goes right here.
Whoa,
and then
I'm
this
impressed.
Data goes right here. And now all we do is when we run it,
bravo.
Thank you. What it's going to do is when we're looking at the evaluation of the model, it's going to run through all of the, it looks like I have something sort of just hanging out up there. Sorry about that. But what's going to happen is when it goes through, you're going to be able to compare the two at the end to see how well they do in comparison to each other. And so that's the cool part. So, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time. I mean, do you want us to sing or dance or anything in between?
I'm okay.
Okay, she's okay. Okay, wonderful.
Okay, cool. So let's wrap up.
Okay.
I would say. Mm-hmm. So what we've covered in this session, in this enlightening session, was pretty much, we've gone through a typical machine learning process mm-hmm. again, actually binary classification, the most simple form of machine learning problem.
Right.
And then actually the question that usually gets asked is, hey, what algorithm actually means what?
Uh-huh.
And usually people think like, oh my goodness, I need to study machine learning for 5 years or something to finally understand. And this is what we try to do with this little teaser mm-hmm. to explain, which algorithm is. And the algorithms that we've covered, perceptron, then SVMs, which you called kernel perceptron because it's pretty much...
It's a cheap way of doing it because there's a way to do the full optimization. I took a step back and I projected and then I did my bouncing around in that space.
But I really like the analogy with pulling up a sheet and then we did decision trees
mm-hmm.
and then finally neural networks and then a little detour into deep learning.
And here you go. There's the comparison, right? You can see which one's better. It looks like the blue one's better. Because the idea is the more area you have under this curve, the better the model did.
Okay, but if you click on the red one, mm-hmm. what's the accuracy? Oh yeah, accuracy is slightly lower. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Cool.
All right, well, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Just one last thing that I want to point out. Back in Germany, we have a big conference coming up, Technical Summit, 17th of November. You just go onto technicalsummit.de. And there we have lots of very cool technical content specifically for developers as well as IT professionals. And there will be one session on machine learning or Azure machine learning as well. So just sign up and come to the conference. Well, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And see you next time then.
Take care.